Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Tulsa County officials are in the midst of a series of meetings around the county to give citizens a sense of the conditions of the Tulsa jail, which are overcrowded by 50 to 100 inmates at any given time, and the overall deplorable conditions at the Juvenile Justice Bureau. In doing so, the hope is to raise awareness and to garner support for a new juvenile justice center and some additional pods at the Tulsa jail. The jail addition would cost about $8.8 million, and a new juvenile justice center would cost approximately $45 million and would be funded primarily by a proposed 15-year sales tax increase of 0.067%. Interestingly, Tulsa City residents are already paying that through city sales tax votes previously. So if this passed, that money would then revert back to the county, so the rate would stay the same, and the rest of the county would move up to that new rate. My guest today is Tulsa County Sheriff Stanley Glantz, our longest-serving county official, who joins us to talk about how much overcrowding there is at the jail, why the jail is overcrowded, and the situation at the Juvenile Justice Bureau. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Sheriff Glantz, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
There's a lot of talk about where we are in our criminal justice within the county, and there are a couple major problems that are starting to be talked about again. One is the juvenile justice system, but I'd like to begin with the overcrowding at the jail. Give us a sense of how overcrowded the jail is currently.
Well, when you look at the jail, we actually have 1,714 beds, but when you actually look at the jail, we have 20 pods, and then we have the medical unit as well as a high security unit. So there's really 22 areas in the jail. The overcrowding has come about in the last 2 years, and the main increase that we have seen is in the women's side of the jail, along with there's a lot more mental health people in the jail than there used to be. And those two areas, I believe, have really caused the increase. When you look at the charges, there's a lot of people that are in jail for not paying their fines, or they've been in jail and they've been to court and they haven't fulfilled the duties that the court required, and so there's been warrants issued for their rearrest. So anytime we stop a car, if it's got two or three people in the car, normally we get them out and run a records checks on them. You're liable to find record or a warrant on one or two of those people, and so we end up bringing those to jail.
Now, you mentioned the two main areas, women's area. How bad is the overcrowding?
The overcrowding today, we have between 1,800 and 1,900 inmates. And what I was going to explain to you, the population is 1,714. But if you look at the real conditions in the jail, anytime you get over 1,650 inmates, you're overcrowded, because, say, you got a juvenile section where you have 12 beds and you only have 8 juveniles in that section.
Can't put 4 adults in there.
That's 4 empty beds, but you can't put anybody else in them. Yeah. So when you look at the 1,700 beds, really there's 1,650 that are usable. And when you have 1,800 inmates, then you're going to have a lot of people on what we call boats, or they're temporary beds. And they're designed to be 24 inches off the floor, and they're like platforms. And the way they're constructed is, if you turn them over, they're more like a boat. That's why we call them boats or canoes. Uh-huh. And the inmates put their mattresses, instead of sleeping on an elevated surface, they'd flip them over and sleep inside the temporary beds. So they're not being used the way they are designed, but they're probably safer being used the way they are.
And are these out in the middle of the pods? Because there's a pod.
Right. Anytime you have a pod, you have a general area where they watch TV and sit and play games and stuff like that. And that area is being used for them sleeping, and then we give them a box to put their incidentals in, the things that they bring into jail with them, or they're allowed to have in jail, like an extra set of underwear and things like that.
So is it pretty common to have people sleeping in the general population areas of each of the pods, or some of the pods within the jail?
There's probably 4 or 5 pods where we're overcrowded with people sleeping in them. Yeah. The special housing units, we have 2 of those, and we don't have anybody on the floor in those units, but the general population is where we have them.
Right. Now, you mentioned the women's areas. How bad is the overcrowding in that particular area? Is it a matter of only got so many pods for women? And
there's three pods normally that the women stay in, and we have them on the floor as well.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned mental health is one of the other areas, and this is something that's very much debated nationally as well as locally and across the state, is what we're doing with people who have mental health issues. A lot of times we're criminalizing, you know, things that are going on with them.
And some
of them are actually committing crimes.
And there's some that have committed violent crimes. We have mentally ill people. We have one guy in jail that smears feces on himself every day. Every day he goes to the bathroom and reaches in and literally puts his hands in it and smears it all over him. And we have to bathe him after he does that every day. He's in jail for a serious violent crime. And what needs to be done with him, he needs to be sent to Vinita and get analyzed to how serious his mental illness is. And I know they won't try him because he's severely mentally ill. And he'll end up in a bed or an institution somewhere down the road. And I'm not sure if they have what they do with those people. We're running out of beds in the state. When I was a young police officer, every major hospital in Tulsa County, you know, from the osteopath to St. John's and St. Francis and Hillcrest, they all had a mental health ward, and they've eliminated those. And I've talked to some hospital administrators, and they tell me, well, the reason we did away with those wards, they weren't profitable. And it, you know, today we only have two or three facilities in the city. That's Laureate and Parkside. Mm-hmm. And so there's really, we're really limited on our mental health beds. In fact, what happens is say I'm a young police officer and I run into a guy that's having problems and he's out in the middle of the street and maybe he's assaulted someone or he's drunk and the family's there saying that he has mental problems. And normally what the officer would do would file an emergency order of detention on him, and he'd take him and he would go to court and be evaluated, and then if there was a bed available, he'd be placed in that. But today we have no beds available, so what happens in Tulsa County is we look statewide for available beds, and those may be in Fort Supply, or there may be one in Oklahoma City or one in Lawton. So that police officer has to take that individual to one of those locations, and then you put the guy in the back seat of a car for 3 or 4 hours, which isn't really conducive to good mental health.
Or if it's Fort Supply, it's more like 5 or 6 hours.
It's a long time. But anyway, so he says, well, instead of filing an emergency order of detention on this guy, I'm going to put him in jail for simple assault.
Or disorderly conduct.
So he comes in our jail, and we take him to court the next day and try and get him on his meds and get him healthy again so he can be released. But we have a lot of those people that are that way.
How's that changed how you know,
well,
we
don't have the physical facilities to deal with them. I don't have the medical staff right now. I have 5 people that deal with the mentally ill on a daily basis. We have a full-time psychiatrist, and they told my undersheriff the other day, if they had this many number of mentally ill in a hospital instead of a staff of 5, they'd have a staff of about 30.
And that was for about 50 cases, something like that.
Uh-huh. Correct. So we're understaffed. We need funds to do that. We need to build a mental health pod, if you want to call it that. It would be split in half. There'd be some general beds for the inmates as well as individual cells so we can deal with the more severely mentally ill.
How much of the overcrowding at the jail and the overall population is due to the fact that the state, I know earlier this fall, they were not picking up inmates in a timely fashion. When they're convicted of a crime, they should transfer from county jurisdiction to state jurisdiction.
Well, anytime we get a J&S judgment and sentencing, then they're supposed to take custody of that inmate. What happened to DOC a few years back, they did a study, and they spend about $35 to $40 a day on an inmate. The state law allows them to keep them in a county facility for $27 a day. So they're going to leave them backed up because it's less costly for DOC to deal with those inmates. So inmates are backed up all over the state. In fact, I think there's 400 or 500 back in county jails. In Tulsa County, this morning, I believe we had 120 that should have been in state custody.
And what's the backlog on that? Is it anything from a couple of days to a couple of months?
Well, it can be days or months. Oklahoma County sued the Department of Corrections, and they have a 60-day limit on how long they can keep an inmate that they have the J&S on. We have inmates that have been there 3 and 4 months that haven't been picked up yet. And generally, that runs between 100 and 150 now. It's been as high as 200.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that they're reimbursing you at a rate of $27 a day?
$27 a day.
What does it cost to house an inmate per day?
We just had a study done by a management company out of Kansas. And as I sat down and negotiate, and we've sued the Department of Corrections over this issue, so we had to come up with a true cost of what it cost us to keep an inmate, and it's $63.90, I believe it is. So it's $64 a day is what it's costing us, and we're being reimbursed $27 a day.
Mm. My guest today is Tulsa County Sheriff Stanley Glantz as we talk about the overcrowding at the Tulsa jail, the need for a new juvenile justice center as well, because the county is proposing a 15-year tax that would raise the tax rate by 0.067% of a penny in communities outside of Tulsa. In fact, that's already being collected in the city of Tulsa. So if it were in fact passed, it would not raise rates within the city of Tulsa. But at this point, it's mainly a proposal, and mainly this is about raising awareness of what's actually going on at the jail and at the juvenile justice center.
The decision on exactly what to ask for hadn't been decided yet.
Yeah.
What we're looking at, when the city started their initiative this past summer, I went and tried to get an initiative petition put together to get the 1.67 back for the county that we had had for several years that was included in one of their bond issues or street issues when Mayor Taylor was mayor, and negotiated with Mayor Bartlett if they would drop that back to just 1.1, then we could have the 067 tax for our problems. And we agreed to do that, to not ask at the same time the time they were asking for. So we're asking for their support. And let me explain to you, it's 0.067, which is, if you look at when you spend $100, it's about 7 cents. So it's not a great deal of money, but it's enough to do what we need to do to fix both juvenile and the jail.
Now, earlier you were talking about the composition of the jail population. You said quite a few are what we call technical violations. You can't pay a fine. You've been sentenced. Right. You can't pay a fine, so you're jailed. It could be, I don't know if you have parole violators at the county jail, but how much of the population is these sort of technical violations as opposed to violent crime or serious crime?
We've looked at statistics there, and I believe it's 11%.
11%
is that are there for failure to pay or something like that. And what happens to those people? A lot of them have been arrested and 4 or 5 times, and they haven't done what the courts have asked them to do, or they've been put on probation or given some conditional release, and they refuse to do that. And so the judge finally gets fed up with them and issues a warrant. My problem is I can't control what the judges do. And so, you know,
that's probably a good thing.
Well, I don't know if it's good or bad, but it's really not a debtor's prison. It's people that refuse to pay their debts that they owe. And, you know, we have a community sentencing program. Instead of sending people to prison, we put them into a community and make them report daily, and we drug test them and so forth. And we have an 85% employment rate for those people. Those are the kinds of programs we need to have more of, people that do something stupid but aren't really bad people, that we can try and help them and assist them to live properly and not be going back to jail or prison. So there's all kinds of programs we should be looking at. In fact, with the state 2 years ago, I think, passed a Justice Reinvestment Act, and that doesn't seem to have taken hold the way it should.
You know, I was looking at a lot of states are saving an awful lot of money and redirecting what they would have saved in building new prisons, which I think the state is talking about at this particular point, or using private contractors as prisons. And a lot of states are saving some significant money. I mean, we're talking 30, 40, 50, 60 million a year, and they're taking a lot of that money that they would have used to build prisons or hire prison guards or correctional facilities back into a community where there's a high, you know, one of the things, the great things about data is you as a law enforcement official and your counterpart at the Tulsa police and the various communities, they know where the problem areas are. And if you put money into those areas and put community services in those areas, a lot of times you can make a serious dent in the crimes of that particular area.
Most people get in a cycle of crime, and then they go to prison. It breaks it for a while, and depending on what happens to them in prison is how they're going to behave when they're released. One of the biggest things that impacts a person staying out of prison or returning is what kind of support mechanism they have for them and what kind of counseling they have. The Justice Reinvestment Act talked about a 90-day probation, and that was for everybody coming out of prison.
Mandatory release supervision.
Right, yeah. Correct. And had we been able to implement that and find support groups for people when they come out of prison to find a place to job, get them a driver's license, get them where they're self-sufficient and have the ability to survive in our economy, then they're not going to be out committing crimes and returning to prison. And we really seriously need to start looking at that. The mechanism was there, but I don't believe the funding was ever present.
And I think that's the big issue, because, I mean, that act provided for risk and needs assessment. So when you have a parolee or a person who's completed his sentence, you've done sort of an assessment of where they are as far as that support network, and you can theoretically, you move them into the services that help them make up for a lack of support within their family group or their surroundings.
Now, there's a lot of things we can do to keep people from coming back or repeat going back to prison. So hopefully sometime we'll make some progress in that arena.
My guest today is Tulsa County Sheriff Stanley Glantz as we talk about overcrowding at the Tulsa jail and also the need for a new juvenile justice center. And this has been something we've been talking about for a number of years. For those who, you know, most Tulsa citizens and citizens of the county have never been near the Juvenile Justice Center, give us a sense of what the facility is like. And
well, the facility is really in disrepair. It's I don't know if you know where Charles Page Boulevard
is.
It's on 25th West Avenue. If you leave downtown and headed out Charles Page towards Sand Springs, it'll be on the north side of the road. And it's actually in a flood area. We added to the building in 1992. And those portions of the building are 4 feet higher than the other portions of the building. So when you have a flood, anyone that's in the lower part of the building gets flooded, or even a hard rain. The roof leaks. They've put in temporary buildings. They were having animals crawl under. It's a double-wide trailer, and they have animals get under it and die, and the smell is just terrible. They tried to cover that smell up with mothballs and made everybody sick. So if you go out and look at it, it's really not conducive to running a court in. And juvenile is one of the district courts, and it has all the amenities that a courtroom has. You have prosecutors, you have defense attorneys, you have public defenders, you have counselors, you have bailiffs, you have deputies working the building. There's social services, there's the Department of Human Welfare, there's a whole group of different institutions that work out of juvenile court, including if you're trying to adopt a new baby, you have to go out there to get the adoption approved, and you're sitting in a room with a lot of people that are there, you know, with their kids have committed crime, and it's just not conducive for the business that we're in. Even though they're in such a terrible building, you know, we have some really good people that work there. And Judge Francine does a marvelous job of looking at kids that are deprived and that are have committed crimes and trying to find some way to get them on the straight and narrow. And how they do as well as they do, it's just remarkable.
I mean, that's the whole thing, is you want intervention at this age.
You want intervention at that age.
There will always be some kids that are, you know, they've committed very violent crimes, and that's one thing. But for a lot of these kids, it's just a matter of getting intervention and changing the direction of their life.
Yeah, and a lot of kids are really influenced by the gangs that they participate in because of the lack of a family life. And if you get those kids before the courts and the judge can see that what they're doing and what they can do to get a support group for that kid and get him in a decent family environment, it'll make a lot of difference. You know, I just this past week, myself and the district attorney, Tim, went down and watched a young man be executed who was 34 years old. And when he was 19, him and three of his buddies that were part of a gang robbed a Quick Trip store and beat a man to death with a baseball bat. And why do we have to let things go that far? You know, three of those people have been executed today. As young people have destroyed, you know, four or five different families. And juvenile can prevent a lot of that.
Ideally, what do we need to have in our juvenile justice facility?
Well, the juvenile justice facility needs to have a decent court and all the amenities for a courtroom.
Now, is there a courtroom at the facility currently?
There's four judges that operate out of that facility now, and we're in a room about 15 by 12 feet, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is the size of their courtrooms.
Wow.
There's one larger courtroom where the presiding judge is, Judge Francine, but most of them are about the size of this room. There's four judges out there today. They need a fifth judge today, and they just simply don't have room for one. They don't have room for any other staff. So there's so much that can be done. Besides the court and all the amenities for a court, you have to have a detention facility. And the standards for detention for juveniles is a lot different than it is for adults. Not only that, they have to meet state and federal standards.
Well, you don't want to do any more harm.
Well, that's right.
And you want those kids to be safe.
You know, that's the thing about a jail. And we say that about prisons. We don't want people harmed that are going to prison. We want them to come out better than they went in. And a lot of that's the environment and how you treat people and how you look at the resources that you have to change their lives. And there's lots of ways to do that. But you need the resources. You need the facility and the resources to do that. The other things that you need in a juvenile facility is places for all the counselors and probation and parole, Department of Human Services.
I understand they're doing that a lot of times in hallways and
public defenders. Yeah, if you're a defense attorney, there's nowhere to talk to your clients. If you're coming out there for an adoption, you sit in the waiting room with everybody else and. It's just not conducive for a business, especially at court, at a district level. It just really needs to be improved.
And I assume you also have an area for the social service interventions and things like that. So that's separate from the actual detention.
Right. Yeah. Right. All of that needs to be compartmentalized, and you need the places to do that.
Well, I know you had your first public information meeting. I know there will be a number of them coming up. What are you hearing from citizens?
Well, what we've heard is a lot of support. Everybody seems to think everyone knows what the problem is, okay? They know we need a new jail or extension to the jail. They know we need a new juvenile facility. What's discussed a lot of times is how do you accomplish that? What kind of tax do you pass? Is there money that's already available? A lot of them are talking about 2025. There's going to be an excess. And what could that, some of that be used for our problem today? Well, a lot of that money won't be available until 2017. And our needs are immediate, especially at the jail and at juvenile, I believe. A lot of people think, well, the jail really needs correcting more than juvenile. But, you know, both of them need fixing really bad.
Both of them, if the overcrowding is bad, as you say, at the jail, and we know, we've heard for a long time about the conditions of the juvenile justice system, we're really literally a lawsuit away from having this taken out of our own hands.
Well, that's right. Anytime you have litigation in the jail or a juvenile, and it's a county facility, and you get a judgment against someone, then that judgment's put in the sinking fund. The sinking fund is a county fund. Anytime a municipality or any government entity in Tulsa County gets sued and they lose that judgment, then it goes to the sinking fund. That sinking fund is actually paid out of your property taxes. So say we'd get a $2 million judgment for a county facility, then that would increase your taxes, depending on the value of your home, maybe $2. What we're asking for literally is 7 cents on $100 to try and fix the problem. And how they're going to present that to the community, I'm not sure yet. That's a decision for Commissioner Peters and Commissioner Smoligo and Commissioner Keith.
Yeah. Now, as you continue, I know that there is some debate about whether you can use Vision 2025 funds. I know the county assessor, Ken Yazel, has said that you can do this without a tax, but it sounds like for you, you can't wait till 2017 on some of these issues.
Well, we can't wait, and before you could use the 2025 money, you'd have to go to a vote of the people to reinitiate the cause of those tax dollars. I know there's three areas where you can spend the money. One's economic development, and I can't remember, an entertainment venue and things like that.
And I think most of the money that's going to be excess is supposed to go back to the various municipalities.
Yeah, the different municipalities.
So that means you'd have to have an agreement.
When they had an overrun on the event center, the BOK Center downtown, they took another $40 million out of the kitty. And so the municipals around the city of Tulsa agreed if they give them $45 million, then they deserve $45 million to split up as well. So any excess that we have, the first $45 goes to the different municipalities around the city of Tulsa. And I did want to clarify one thing. The tax, the 067, will be charged to anybody that just shops in the city of Tulsa. If you live in the suburbs and you come into Tulsa to do your shopping, you'd still pay that tax, and it would not be an increase.
Yeah.
But if you lived outside and shop outside of the city of Tulsa, it'd be a small increase.
Right.
But again, it's 7 cents on $100.
Well, I guess you'll be having more public meetings down the road.
Right, and they're at various locations throughout the county.
All right. Well, Sheriff Glantz, appreciate your time today. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tulsa County Sheriff Stanley Glantz speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa about the overcrowded conditions at the Tulsa Jail and the conditions at the Juvenile Justice Center. County officials are raising awareness about the need to increase the number of jail pods at the jail and the need for a new Juvenile Justice Center. They're holding a series of public safety town hall meetings this week and next. The next are scheduled for Thursday at the Rudisill North Regional Library and the meeting hall at the Broken Arrow Chamber and Broken Arrow Public Schools. Those will both be Thursday from 6 to 8. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent programs, they're available online anytime at publicradiotulsa.org. And I want to thank you for listening. I'm Rich Fisher.